This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
Inside Story on BFM 89.9.
It's 6:06. Welcome to Inside Story. You're with Sharmila Ganesan and Lee Chui Lin. Today is World Art Day, so we're observing that by looking at the traditional arts here in Malaysia.
First, Pauline Fano Pusaka will be talking to us about the Malaysian traditional art scene and the challenges it has been facing.
And then we'll hear about the Adi Guru program and how it aims to uplift local practitioners of the traditional arts. For this, we'll speak to Izan Satrina, CEO of the Cultural Economy Development Agency.
Finally, we'll be hearing from a traditional arts practitioner, Angasri Wahyuni, who is a performer of Reog Ponorogo. This is Inside Story.
It is 6:07. You're listening to Inside Story with Sharmila and Lynn. Today's World Art Day, and that's an international celebration of the fine arts, but also a day where all forms of art that nurture creativity, innovation, and cultural diversity are celebrated. And we thought this tied in really nicely with a recently announced partnership between Cendana, or the Cultural Economy Development Agency, and Pusaka, which aims to empower traditional arts through uplifting local masters of various traditional art forms.
Yes. So the partner in question is... They're partnering up with Pusaka, right? And Pusaka are no strangers to the station. We speak to them fairly regularly, mostly targeted or looking at traditional arts here in the country. And I think acknowledging the fact that while perhaps it's not something that many of us think of in the course of our day, they are nonetheless sort of vibrant, living art forms that need support and need to be celebrated in many ways, and perhaps never more so than right now. 2020 has been a very, very tough time for the arts in general, and for traditional arts practitioners, I think the challenges would be as acute, if not more. So just to look at some numbers of the arts in general, according to its minister, the Tourism, Culture and Arts Minister, Datuk Sri Nancy Shukri, they've suffered losses as an industry of about 85 million ringgit, and that was due to the pandemic. So 2.21 million, the plan is to provide that to 217 NGOs to revive the culture, arts and heritage sector. Also a reflection, I think, of the diversity of what we're talking about when we discuss Malaysian art forms.
And I love that you said living, right? Because especially when we talk about the traditional arts, they are not just an output or creation that you sort of put on a wall. It's a part of communities. They are practiced over generations. They are passed on through mentorships or just through community transmission. And one of the big challenges when we talk about these sorts of losses and this question of preserving art forms is really that in Malaysia, a lot of these art forms don't necessarily exist within those spaces or ecosystems that we're familiar with here. So you might hear of Mak Yong, you might love batik, you might love any of these things, right? But you may not necessarily be directly contributing to those things because they're not based in KL. And in the parts that they are based in, they exist within very community-driven spaces which have struggled with the pandemic over the last year as well.
Yeah, I just want to say today we're talking about art and not artifacts. And that, I think, is probably the key difference, right? It's not something that you're going to see in a museum. It's not something that has been mummified and set in stone and then we can now look at. Instead, there is an opportunity here to note where the challenges are and therefore potentially find ways in which to further highlight or celebrate these art forms, or at the very least, raise awareness of the fact that as Malaysians, right? And I think Malaysians tend to be so proud of the things that we want to take ownership of. So we're like, oh, yeah, when some random person wins, you know, wins a sporting award somewhere in the world or some sort of reality show, we're like, yes. Did you know that actually one of his uncles was raised in Penang for 2 years? Did you know that? And we're in such a rush to claim, to claim people as Malaysians, to claim things as Malaysians, as Malaysian. And I think that we should therefore be looking more closely at our own backyard and the kind of art forms that are practiced here, because they really are uniquely ours.
I wanted to know particularly whether there were any that you kind of hold fondly, because for me, the last year has really made me realize I've missed out on so many things. I've always wanted to watch a live Mat Yong performance. Mm. I've always wanted to watch Kuda Kepang in person. And I realized that doing what I do, which is often covering the arts, I should have had more of an opportunity to do this than I realize I have. And we covered opera for Chinese New Year, right? And I realized I had never watched a Chinese opera performance.
I have seen Kuda Kepang, and it was the word I want to use is electrifying. That's how it felt, I think, to be in the same space. But and so that's what leaps to mind, aside from things like lion dance. And that's just sort of part of the celebratory feel, right, of certain festivals. But you mentioned batik earlier, and I love batik. We talk about this a lot. We recently discussed it, in fact, on the show. Every so often we bring it up. And there are always such sincere responses, right, of people who love batik and appreciate it and wish that it were more integrated into our daily life. So I guess, you know, that's a good example of something that is actually an art form, but because it is maybe, you know, more commodified, something that we can purchase, it's not always recognized as such, but it actually is.
We're talking about Malaysian traditional art forms today, its struggles, and what can be done to preserve it. So we want to know what kind of art you enjoy. Are you a fan of traditional Malaysian art forms? Tell us which ones. You can call us 7733 2900, WhatsApp 018-789-8899, tweet us at BFM Radio. Coming up, we look at the challenges faced by the local traditional arts with Pauline Fan of Pusaka. Keep it here on Inside Story, BFM 89.9.
Break from mediocrity. BFM 89.9.
It is 6:14. You're listening to Inside Story with Sharmila and Lynn. Today we're talking about the traditional arts here in Malaysia, as well as a program that's been introduced to empower the masters of these traditional arts. And we wanted to know what sorts of art you enjoy and whether you're a fan of the traditional Malaysian art forms. You can call us 7733 2900, WhatsApp 018-789-8899, tweet us at BFM Radio. Now on the line with us to give us some insight into the traditional arts industries here in Malaysia, we have Pauline Fan, Creative Director at Pusaka. Pauline, thanks for joining us.
Hello, Sharmila. Hello, Lynn.
Let's start with what the traditional arts here in Malaysia encompass.
The traditional arts in Malaysia is really vast and various in its expression and embodiment. And I would say it encompasses a large variety of cultural forms that are passed down from generation to generation. And this includes oral traditions and expressions such as storytelling and things like epic poetry, pantun, also traditional music, dance, theatre, traditional crafts, traditional visual arts, and there's a whole range of the types of arts that it encompasses. And of course, these kinds of art forms exist in all the various communities that live in Malaysia. But beyond the art forms themselves, I would say that the traditional arts are also, they are repositories of deep knowledge, worldview, aesthetic concepts as well, of each of these communities. And also they represent the kind of collective memory of the people of Malaysia.
And just for context, I think earlier we were talking about the sheer variety of Malaysian traditional arts, and that's something that you mentioned as well. Could you give us some examples?
Well, if you travel just the peninsula, not even venturing yet into East Malaysia, but even if you just travel the peninsula from the northernmost tip to the southernmost tip, almost every district and possibly even every village, you will find some form of traditional art that is practiced in the local community. And they're all very distinct from each other. So you have these, even something like, which we think of as very generic, just say the kompang tradition, that hand drum tradition that's widely practiced among the Malay communities. There are various kinds of kompang tradition that you find in the little corners of Malaysia, of the peninsula. And it's quite amazing to see the distinctness and the color of each of those forms. So it's not just, kompang is not just what we usually witness at Malay weddings. There are deeper traditions as well, and older traditions that less well known perhaps, but still practiced. For example, and you find this in various communities. Not everything is practiced perhaps as a performative art form, but they exist also in other parts of the community.
So you mentioned earlier cultural repositories, right?
Yes.
What role do these arts play within their communities?
They have, I would say, a very layered role that they play. And it's always, there's always, of course, an aesthetic value, but they also very often serve social functions and sometimes even ritual purposes. And so there are many traditions which serve purposes, for example, of healing in a community. For example, the Mainputri tradition of Kelantan, which is a form of psychotherapy that incorporates music and dance in to heal a patient of something like depression. They also, if you look at some of the Orang Asli communities, the Mameri community, for example, many of their cultural expressions, like their songs and their dances, very often are performed in commemoration of the departed. And so they have specific songs that they perform for the what they call the Arimoyang, which is kind of, it's almost, it's like the day of the dead, but also the day of that they commemorate the spirits and the ancestors.
So we often hear about the issues when it comes to preserving and celebrating the traditional arts. Could you elaborate on some of the main challenges here and perhaps also how the last year has, essentially exacerbated those challenges?
Yes. We, as you know, in conversations with us, we never like to use the word preservation because it sounds, preservation sounds like it's that these traditions are something that are dying or dead. And as you said earlier, Lynn, these are living traditions, absolutely, they are. And the term traditional, sometimes it blinds us to actually how much of living traditions they are. Traditional doesn't necessarily mean that they are old or obsolete. It's actually sometimes a term of convenience just to emphasize that they are something that has been passed down. However, and also to distinguish them from more contemporary forms of art, but they are absolutely living traditions. And the challenges, I would say, is mostly in terms of long-term sustained support for the work at the community level. I would say that's the largest challenge. Very often when we do get opportunities to engage traditional artists, they are, it's very much a one-off or sometimes either to do a performance or to commission a particular art form. But in terms of sustained funding and sustained support for the ongoing work at the community level, that's always a challenge. And that long-term work includes things like the practice at the community level, also the transmission from master to student and to in the local community, and also long-term work of documentation. Those are the things I think are the most challenging.
So if we were to talk about the most pressing needs, what would you say those were when it comes to these traditional arts communities?
The most pressing needs, I would say most traditional artists and communities that we've worked with in our many years of working with them across the country, most of them have really expressed that the need to pass down their knowledge. And very often there's not enough support for that. And Pusaka has worked with various communities, of course, on various projects. But, of course, we can't work with everyone. And we are also limited by our scope and our size and the funding that we get for certain projects. But by and large, that is the main concern of most of these arts, traditional arts communities, is to be able to pass down their knowledge to the next generation in a deep way, because, of course, traditional arts is not like learning in a university or an academy or a school. It still is very dependent on the oral transmission between master and student, and very often it takes years and years and years of study and practice to actually master those forms.
So on that subject, the Adiguru program that you've begun with Chandana does focus on empowering arts masters. Can you talk to us about that?
Yes, this Adiguru Chandana program has actually emerged precisely from these concerns. And so when we started talking to Chandana about this program, actually several years ago, and finally it's come to fruition, it really was based on the work that we've done over for more than 20 years, engaging with these communities and really kind of knowing what their needs are and trying to address those needs in a more kind of comprehensive way. And so the Adiguru Chindana program, it's really looking to support and in a kind of more sustained way the work of traditional masters at the community level. And so to support them in working to transfer their knowledge down to the next generation, of course also to acknowledge them and to honor them for the mastery that they have achieved. Many times there are masters throughout the country, and we probably only know a handful who have actually kind of emerged into a more visible platform in the urban centers. But outside of KL, there are masters in every district, and many of them are really unsung and unrecognized and beyond their community. I mean, of course, they're recognized in their community, but nationally and as a society, many of us don't know about them, and we don't honor them for who they are and for what they have achieved.
So I wanted to draw on one aspect of that, right? This idea of empowering these masters. What sorts of supports do these master practitioners in particular need?
So specifically, this is exactly what this grant is actually aimed to do, is we actually aim to support them, one, to kind of run a long-term, or at least for 12 months, which is a beginning of something long-term, of training in the communities for local youth. Many of them are already doing that, but they're getting no support in what they're doing. Another thing is also many of them need assistance to perhaps enhance or improve the infrastructure. Just say like maybe the workshops or the little performance space that they work in. Very often it's dilapidated and they don't have the access to funds to actually improve that space. And we also hope to facilitate connections with wider society and hopefully be able to enhance their profiles just so that they garner wider appreciation as well.
So if someone listening perhaps wanted to get better acquainted with local traditional arts, where could they begin? What can they check out?
Well, in terms of to actually watch a traditional performance, at the moment it's a little bit difficult, of course, because of pandemic times. But hopefully that will change in the coming months. I would say, first of all, please follow Pusaka, because we are doing a lot of work in this field. There are also, of course, other organizations who are doing similar work. I'd like to recommend actually the work of Too Young Initiative in Sarawak, which has been doing fantastic work with communities of the Orang Ulu in Sarawak. But there are, keep your eyes open, I think. And I think in the next coming month after Raya, we will be actually doing some form of performances in Kuala Lumpur, but with traditional artists from outside. So please look out for that.
Pauline, in closing, it's World Art Day today. So do you have a wish for us?
A wish? Of course, in terms of the traditional arts, I hope that the traditional arts of Malaysia are really embraced as part of our collective heritage and our collective legacy, and really also as part of the art landscape. Very often when we think about arts, we forget about the traditional arts, but in fact, we should be deeply rooted in them. Even I think contemporary practitioners have a lot to gain and a lot to learn from the traditional arts. And that's not to say that they have to learn those forms, but to engage with them in a deeper and more meaningful way.
Pauline, thanks so much for speaking with us.
Thank you so much.
That was Pauline Phan, Creative Director at Pusaka, speaking to us about the traditional arts landscape here in Malaysia, the challenges they face, and really why we should be valuing them so much more than we do right now. Let us know what kind of arts you enjoy and whether you're a fan of the traditional Malaysian ones, which are the ones that you've been to or that you like. You can call us 77332900, WhatsApp 018-789-8899, tweet us at BFM Radio. After this, we'll be joined by Izan Satrina, CEO of Chindana, to hear more about the Adiwira program, which uplifts master practitioners of the traditional arts here in Malaysia. And it's all of this is because today is World Art Day. That's what we're celebrating here on the station. Keep it here on Inside Story, BFM 89.9.
Be free-minded. BFM 89.9.
It is 6:37. You're listening to Inside Story with Sharmila and Lynn. We're spending this hour celebrating World Art Day by looking at the traditional arts here in Malaysia. So earlier we heard from Pauline Fan of Pusaka about the struggles of the traditional arts scene here and really what it encompasses. What are some of the highlights that we perhaps should be working better to preserve? And on that note, we're going to now be looking at a newly launched program by the Cultural Economy Development Agency, or Cendana, in partnership with Pusaka. And it's a program called Adiwira, which aims to highlight and uplift masters in the field of Malaysian traditional arts. What kind of arts do you enjoy? And let us know whether you're a fan of the traditional Malaysian art forms that we've been talking about. You can call us 7732900, WhatsApp 018-789-8899, tweet us at BFM Radio. Now we're joined by Izan Satrina, CEO of Cendana. Izan, it's good to have you with us. Now, Cendana has teamed up with Pusaka to launch this Adiguru program. Could you tell us more about the program and what it hopes to achieve?
Yeah, so it's really great. We've recently just signed an MOU with Pusaka, and it marks the initial point of collaboration to work together in enhancing sustainability, visibility, and preservation of the traditional arts masters, or those who are experienced and committed practitioners of the traditional arts in Malaysia. So part of the effort includes us embarking on the Adiguru Cendana program, which hopes to sustain the development and ensure continuity of traditional art forms of Malaysia, heighten awareness, encourage transfer of knowledge and documentation work, as well as create partnerships with our selected masters.
And talk us through, how is this program going to work?
Right. Okay. So we've opened a nationwide call for applications and nominations on the 8th of April. For persons who possess an exceptionally high degree of knowledge and skills required for the practice and transmission of traditional art forms. So this would entail the first phase of the program. And this first phase is really a funding program that provides 30,000 ringgit over the period of 12 months to develop programs or improve necessary infrastructure vital to the practice of the art form. So it ties back really with the objective, which includes for us to heighten awareness, encourage transfer of knowledge, documentation of work, and create partnerships with the masters. Now, subsequently, towards, I believe the third or fourth quarter of the year, there will be a residency program, which we are currently calling it Contemporary and Traditional Immersive Program Residency. And this program basically invites applications from the wider creative practitioners. So you can be a fashion designer, photographer, filmmaker, animator, gamer, and all sorts to engage in a week-long immersive residency with our masters from the Adiguru Cendana program. Because we believe that nurturing meaningful creative collaborations between the traditional communities and our wider creative practitioners will encourage a deeper appreciation of the traditional arts, but also potentially open new avenues for creative exploration, cultural development, new body of work, and so much more. So the program will focus to support those in specialized areas that include oral traditions, music, dance, storytelling, visual arts, and crafts. So it can be a range of folk songs, pantun, syair, gurindam, tugaza, dondang sayang, traditional Chinese ensemble, to Portuguese dance, kuda kepang, ngajat, to penglipolara, to calligraphy, to traditional textiles, wood carving, and many more that are currently defined under these categories.
And how does the government view its role when it comes to supporting these traditional arts?
So Cendana, as a unit of My Creative Ventures, we are publicly funded. And My Creative Ventures is a wholly owned company of the Minister of Finance Incorporated. And we also report to the Ministry of Communications and Multimedia. We recognize ourselves also as part of the arts community. So we must continue to recognize the past, present, and the future contributions of our Adigurus and those who champion the traditional arts from generation to generation to Malaysia. So obviously, I can only comment on behalf of Cindana, and I feel that these efforts are essential and critical, and the collaboration with Pusaka will help ensure that the effort that we are undertaking is done in a respectful, informed, culturally relevant and inclusive way.
What are the challenges, though, in doing this when these practitioners aren't necessarily based in KL or even other urban centres?
So we've been quite fortunate in the programme implementations, where we have obviously worked with our ministries, both Ministry of Communications and Multimedia and Ministry of Finance and their respective agencies. But in addition to that, we've also worked with agencies like Kraftangan that's been really beneficial for the communities. So to further strengthen our nationwide reach and to amplify these programmes, we are working with Pusaka to do so. We recognize that our rural and traditional creative practitioners may not have access to Wi-Fi, smartphones, tablets, computers. We know that sometimes dalam satu rumah, ya, one household, there can only perhaps be only one phone for a family of eight that, you know, they share this phone, or we are aware that in places that they do not have Wi-Fi. Therefore, we've integrated a nomination process in this Adi Guru Cendana program. But also we are leveraging on Pusaka and its network to assist our rural and traditional arts practitioners. In addition to that, we have included experts on the matter who will form our selection committee in case we've missed out anybody else deserving of this award.
Now, this program also sets out to strengthen the infrastructure for the arts. Could you explain what this means and why it's important?
Well, I think when we had started work on this program, we realized that, of course, Malaysia's traditional arts provide communities, groups and individuals with a sense of self, identity and expression, while safeguarding traditional art forms encourages the continuity and transmission of local knowledge to the next generation. But much of this knowledge and skills linked to traditional arts are in danger of disappearing due to declining numbers of practitioners. You know, mungkin rosak infrastructure, growing disinterest of young people, lack of funds, and a lot more. So part of the funding program does indeed support to strengthen the infrastructure that they wish to maintain or wish to have in the future. So, for example, I think some of the feedback from the communities include that a lot of the traditional rural communities are always brought out to Kuala Lumpur to perform. But when they go back, they're not able to continue practicing at their homes in kampongs only because sometimes the younger ones are not interested. You can't maintain a living. Or the wakaf or bangsal or the kampong community stage that they have, dah rosak because of hujan and banjir and all that. So we do look into supporting repairing those works or strengthening the infra that they have in mind or what they have just to ensure the practice continues.
So Izan, who can apply for this program? Where can people find out more?
So in general, we do look at direct applications or public nominations encompassing areas that I've mentioned earlier on, theatre, music, dance, storytelling, visual arts and craft. They can be Malaysian citizens or organizations actively engaged in the traditional arts sector for a minimum of 10 years. They must be recognized by his or her larger community as a master of their art or tradition, or those who are experienced and committed to their art or tradition. So you can read more on our terms of reference of this program on Cendana's website, www.cendana.com.my, or Google Adi Guru Cendana, and you'll be able to find links on it as well.
Izan, thank you for speaking with us today. That was Izan Satrina, CEO of Cendana, talking to us about their partnership with Pusaka to launch the Adi Guru program, which uplifts and empowers masters of the traditional arts communities here in Malaysia. And for more information on that, you can visit www.cendana.com.my. It's World Art Day today. So World Art Day today. So we've been talking about the traditional arts here in Malaysia. And we're asking you what sorts of art you enjoy and whether you're a fan of the traditional Malaysian art forms. You can call us 7733 2900, WhatsApp 018-789-8899, tweet us at BFM Radio. And after this, we'll be speaking to a practitioner of the traditional arts. So keep it here on Inside Story, BFM 89.9.
Bringing fresh meaning. BFM 89.9.
It is 6:48. You're listening to Inside Story with Sharmila and Lynn, where we are celebrating World Art Day and talking about the traditional arts in Malaysia. We heard earlier about a program between Chandana and Pusaka to empower local practitioners of traditional arts. Let us know the ones that you enjoy, whether you are a fan of traditional Malaysian art forms. That number to call, 7733 2900, WhatsApp 018-789-8899, tweet us at BFM Radio. And now to hear directly from a practitioner of the traditional arts, we'll be speaking to Anga Sri. We spoke earlier, actually, to Anga Sri Wayuni, who is a performer of the Ryog Ponorogo, a very visually arresting performance that I don't think many people are necessarily very familiar with.
I believe that it is actually recognized as being the world's largest mask, because it is a dance that is performed with one of the dancers wearing what is truly a magnificent mask, featuring a lion's face, a peacock above the head, and it's very, very evocative. I wish... it's not often that I wish this wasn't radio and was TV instead, but I do think this is something you need to see.
And I would highly recommend that you go look it up online just to get an idea of what it looks like. Now, it originates from East Java, but it has a foothold here in Malaysia as well. And as I said, we did speak earlier to Anga Sri Wayuni, who leads the Persatuan Seni Sri Wayuni. And Anga did prefer to speak in Malay, so we will be summarizing his key points along the way. First, we asked him to talk to us about Ryog Ponorogo and how it's performed.
Seni Ryog Ponorogo ni adalah kesenian daripada Jawa Timur. Ia merupakan sebuah permainan drama tari yang diceritakan melalui sejarah dia. Lah. Seni Ryog ni dia sering dipersembahkan di acara keramaian seperti majlis perkahwinan, majlis perasmian dan sebagainya lah. Kalau ada beberapa acara-acara besar macam konsert apa semua tu ataupun majlis-majlis formal yang boleh dilibatkan turut serta. Dia dipersembahkan bermula daripada tarian, beberapa tarian lah. Ryog ni nama untuk semua, apa permainan Ryog Ponorogo. Tapi untuk tarian-tarian tu dia ada nama-nama dia. Okey, permulaan permainan ni kita akan diiringi dengan pemain muzik gamelan. Pemain muzik gamelan tu akan mulakan permainan tu dengan irama muzik serta lagu-lagu yang diorang akan nyanyikan. Kemudian dimulakan dengan tarian jatilan. Jatilan tu kuda perempuan yang membuat pergerakan irama kuda serta lenggokkan kuda tu dengan ada step-step dia sendirilah.
So Anga explained there how Ryog Ponorogo is a performing art originating from East Java, which involves traditional dance and is most often performed at formal ceremonies, for example, weddings. And the performance begins with music played on the gamelan, followed by several dances, including jatilan, which involves a group of 3 to 4 dancers symbolizing horses. So we also asked him to tell us about the history of the performance here in Malaysia.
Sejarah seni kesenian Ryog di Malaysia ni wujudnya kerana ada keturunan dan pendatang dari Jawa itu sendiri yang datang ke Malaysia, di mana ketika dahulu arwah moyang-moyang yang berasal daripada tanah Jawa lalu membuka satu penempatan di kampung-kampung dan menghidupkan budaya dan seni daripada sana. Di Malaysia hanya di Johor saja yang masih mengekalkan kesenian ni, mengekalkan budaya dan adab daripada dulu-dulu sampailah sekarang di Malaysia, di Johor lah. Sebab itu ia menjadikan salah satu keunikan yang masih ada dekat dalam Malaysia dan juga Johor.
So Anga was explaining that Ryog Ponorogo made its way to Malaysia when the Javanese people generations ago migrated to Johor and built their lives there.
So next, Anga shares the art form's significance within the community.
Ini memang sangat penting kerana dalam budaya seni lah yang kami dapat mengeratkan silaturahim budaya dengan bersama-sama dapat mengenal asal muasal saudara yang berada di tanah Jawa. Sebagai contoh, anak-anak tempatan yang tidak mengenali keturunan mereka bila mereka terlibat sama dalam budaya seni Riok ni, secara langsung mereka akan kenal dan mengetahui sejarah atau nenek moyang mereka yang dulu-dulu kala lah. Ada saya kat situ. Benda tu penting. Juga kat sini saya tekankan sebab benda ni daripada keturunan. Bila kita tak mewarisi benda ni, memang orang cakap benda ni benda yang lama. Macam orang cakap dah lapuk dari dia, lapuk usia lah kan. Kita telan usia dengan zaman. Jadi kalau kita tak teruskan untuk pandang benda ni penting, siapa lagi yang nak teruskan? Itu pada pandangan saya ni penting kat situ lah.
So Anga says this traditional art form is important because it encourages a strengthening of the community bond and ensures that people get to learn of their ancestors in Java. He also said that the art form will disappear if the present generation doesn't continue the practice.
So we also asked how the pandemic has affected their performances.
Pandemic memang menjejaskan. Sangat-sangat menjejaskan. Sampai saya rasa macam adakah perlu diteruskan, adakah perlu ditahan. Sehingga saya rasa sabar, sampailah. Yalah, macam sekarang kita nak buat apa sembahan kan, kena patuh pada SOP semua tu. Lepas tu, kalau kita buat persembahan, penonton tak boleh ramai, kira ada jarak. Jadi, salah satunya yang menjejaskan kemudian saya, kita tak boleh bertemu secara, tak boleh nak cari bakat baru tu. Bakat atau pelatih-pelatih baru tu. Tak dapat berkumpul untuk belajar dengan mereka pada tempoh yang sebelum ni kan. Kita tak boleh keluar rumah, tak boleh rentas daerah, tak boleh rentas negeri semua tu. Kat situ memang menjejaskan kumpulan kami.
So Anga explained that the pandemic has greatly, and he emphasized greatly, affected the performances of the group since they have to be done according to SOPs, meaning audiences are really limited to small numbers. And since the performers are also not able to meet face to face, they haven't been able to meet with new talent to train together.
So we then asked him how they've been managing over the past year during the pandemic.
Kami dapat bersuara muka dengan mereka pun melalui atau talian lah. Kongsi video, kita buat video, kita latih melalui macam tu je. Kadang bila dia orang tak faham, dia orang kasi kembali. Kita sentiasa bercerita supaya minat dan semangat tu tak hilang. Mak Louis kat dalam grup tu cakap, kita macam update, kita bagi semangat. Kadang kita cerita, kita akan jumpa, kita akan beritahu benda ni, pandemik COVID-19 ni mungkin akan pupus. Termasuk juga sebab saya sebelumnya ada terlibatkan diri dalam kita orang punya kumpulan ni dalam seni pusaka, terlibat dengan pusaka punya job melalui atas talian semua tu. Jadi kita kerap bertanya juga, diorang pun kerap bertanya kepada kita orang juga. Diorang pun ada follow up kat diorang dan diorang pun kadang bertanya khabar kepada kita orang juga. Takut, diorang pun takut kita punya kumpulan ni, saya punya kumpulan ni terjejas sangat. Kita pun setiap minggu, selalunya hari Jumaat, kita ada latihan. Kadang hari Sabtu, hari Minggu, macam ada kerja kahwin, kita kerap ada persembahan tu.
So before the pandemic, they used to practice and perform often, usually every weekend. But because of COVID, he had to keep in touch with his community through online video calls. And they also recorded videos of their practice sessions and shared these with each other, just so that they could keep their spirits up.
We also asked him about what kind of support his group needs.
Pada saya lah, seperti alat-alat muzik persembahan. Itu memang, yelah sebab kita buat memang ada peralatan tu. Tapi dah usang juga. Tapi kita still jaga, still perbaiki. Kadang rosak, kita perbaiki kan. Itu peralatan-peralatan muzik persembahan. Situasi pandemik yang banyak buat barang-barang tersebut rosak. Karat yang tersimpan terlalu lama. Sebab kalau kita tak guna tu, memang dia akan macam, kalau kita guna dia elok tau. Kalau kita tak guna, macam ada problem. Macam garat. Lepas tu dia punya kayu dia macam dah mula reput. Barang-barang yang kami ada pun, itu semua adalah tinggalan khazanah lama yang daripada dulu lah. Selain itu, kami juga memerlukan dana untuk tempat latihan dan kami berkumpul kat mana. Kita tak terlalu kejar lah. Yang kita kerja sekarang ni adalah boleh kekalkan sebulan ni dengan keperluan yang perlu ada.
So Angah says, since the musical instruments they use for performances have been kept in storage and so not used, they've been showing signs of wear, some are rusting, and they also need support in terms of performance and training venue.
And lastly, we asked him what his hopes were for World Art Day.
Saya harap seluruh kesenian leluhur di dalam dunia ni dipelihara dan dapat teruskan dengan baik. Kalau bukan kita, siapa lagi? Jika ada di antara kita yang masih minat, insyaAllah kesenian ini tidak akan mati begitu saja. Tak kisahlah pada seni tarian yang lain ke, seni tarian riok ke ataupun yang lain, saya harap diorang masih lagi ada semangat untuk kekalkan diorang punya minat dan diorang punya jiwa diorang tu pada kesenian masih lagi kuat untuk diorang kekalkan dan kembangkan sampailah bila-bila. Itulah saya punya harapan dan azam saya sepenuh hari kesenian sedunia ni.
So Anga hopes that the traditional arts will always be protected and cared for, and if we hold on to our passion and spirit for the arts, we will be able to ensure its continued existence in the world. Such a lovely wish to end on this World Art Day segment, I suppose. And if you want to hear more about that, the Bigger Picture team earlier looked at the importance of arts education in Malaysia and how it evolved. Just look for The Show Must Go On But Safely on BFM.my or the BFM app. And now, just to close off the segment, a little bit of what Seni, what Ryok Ponorogo sounds like, courtesy of Pusaka, BFM 89.9.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, the business station.